About a year ago, I experienced indigenous food culture for the first time. I participated in an indigenous culinary workshop and learned how to make bannocks. At that time, I focused on the ingredients and the recipe rather than the meanings behind the food. But in fact, every indigenous dish carries more meanings than what we see and taste. In this episode, we are talking with Vancouver Indigenous food business owners who are defining the food they serve in their own ways, and using these meanings to support their communities. Paul Natural is the owner of Mr. Bannock Food Truck, the one and only Indigenous food truck in Vancouver. 2 years ago, with the support from Van City and Squamish Nation, he established the business in North Vancouver.
We focus on all the traditional ingredients of the West Coast and the ancient cooking methods. So we do a ton of smoked meat. We do some clay baking, some stone baking as well. Some of my favorite things to cook with is bison, venison. We do some elk once in a while and things like quail as well.
So how did you decide to start this food truck?
I always knew I wanted to be a cook and a chef, but I didn't know I was going to specialize in indigenous food culture, right? I worked in a hotel as well. Like, I was a dishwasher there, and then I was a prep cook. And I went from salad to grill to saute. And then after that, I went to culinary school in 2010, and I took an Aboriginal specialty program, and that was at Vancouver Community College. And just since then, like, I've been busting my butt off trying to share, showcase, and educate about, like, my food culture. Like in Vancouver, there's only one restaurant and there's only one food truck, right? So there's a big gap in showcasing and sharing, like, Indigenous food culture.
So you just mentioned showcasing Indigenous food culture. In what ways does your food truck play a role in this and share Indigenous food culture?
When I was young, like, I thought cooking burgers and like hot dogs is super easy, so why not, right? And like back then, my mind was like really, I guess, green to everything. And like going to culinary school just opens your eyes on how many different things that you can do. But like growing outside of cooking school and into the regular industry, like the food industry, like I started to realize that how much stuff I knew about my own food culture just from my grandmothers and my mothers, right? And on my mom's side and my dad's side had their own techniques and big hits that they did, right? My grandmother on my mom's side, she would do a baked bannock and it was like super good. Like, I can't even cook that good, and I'm a pretty good cook. And then on my other side, my dad's side, she did a fried bread, and both of them had different techniques. And I just used what I learned from both of them to do what I do now with Mr. Bannock, right? And like also just some of their knowledge, like some of the medicines and stuff that we used when we were growing up. There's stuff like prog leaves and devil's club and then going berry picking in the summertime, right? Like now, like I'm a lot older and I have my own kids. Like there's not many places where you can go and pick like those wild blackberries like we used to when we were younger, right? But with that being said, like there's a bunch of farms here, maybe like an hour away or something, but I like to take the kids out there and we'll go pick like blackberries or blueberries, raspberries or strawberries, right? So they still get to have that experience like I did when I was younger with my grandmothers, right?
So do you see this food truck as a continuation of your family traditions and cultures?
Yeah, for sure. Because like there's, well, not my dad. He passed away when I was pretty young, right? I was 11 years old, but learning a lot of stuff from my grandmothers and just the way they did stuff and like everything that I've seen them doing when I was younger, right? Just keeping like traditions alive, right? Like doing the stuff both of my grandmothers did in their kitchen and how they fed myself, my two sisters, my mom, my aunts, my cousins, my uncles, right? Like having dinner was always a big thing because my grandmother always had her door open to everybody, right? We had a house full of people, and in the summertime, my cousins would come down from the interior, and my uncle was a hunter, so like they would go hunting, but they would bring home like fresh venison, and there'd be steaks, there'd be ground meat, there'd be roasts, there would be like chops, there would even be like pepperoni, right? And like I didn't realize how lucky we were when we were younger to have that, right? It was it's pretty awesome. Like it's pretty expensive for that for me to buy right now, right? I think I got a case, like I got a bunch of burgers and some of the bison back ribs, and it was like $250 roughly, and that's pretty expensive. Like when we used to get it for free, right?
Yeah, so since the ingredients are quite expensive, do you meet any economic hardships when running the food truck?
Like right off the bat, when I got my truck and I got my small business loan, like the truck didn't even get to my place. Like I bought it and paid for it, but it broke down. And right off the bat, that was an extra $1,500 to get it fixed and back up and running. And when you're on a tight budget, like I didn't account for that. Like I almost didn't launch in 2018 because of that. I was super lucky that my stepdad and my mom lent me some money to get it fixed and to get the rest of the inventory that I needed, right? I just suggest like when you're planning, like you get a business plan together, you make sure you have a A, B, and C plan just in case something like that happens, right? And like I didn't have somebody to tell me that or to show me that or teach me that, right?
Having experienced the hardships of establishing a food business without guidance, Latrell decided to join the board of the Indigenous Culinary of Associated Nations.
There's a huge gap in the culinary sector for Indigenous people, right? And Indigenous foods. And like we're trying to fix that with ICANN. Like each region has a chef like me and the other board members for people to reach out and ask questions and hopefully guide and mentor those up and comers, right? And one of the biggest focuses is to be a voice in all of our Indigenous communities to represent Indigenous culinary. Like we want to showcase the people that need a hand, right? Like all the hard work that we've been putting in, like we've done ourselves, right? Like none of us have any major partners or financiers and all that kind of stuff, right? Like we've been pretty successful and like we just want to give back and help out and really bring forward Indigenous culinary to the world, right?
Every day, Natrol is dedicated to sharing his culinary experiences with people around the globe through social media. He also participates in culinary events to share Indigenous dishes. On the day of the interview, Natrol was making Indigenous specialty dishes for Kenata Takeover 2020.
I got bison back ribs with triple berry and tequila barbecue sauce. And then I got squash, potatoes, and then I got some fresh strawberries and blueberries for dessert as well. And I'll probably put a little bit of honey with that, and it's just good as is, right? You don't need to add a ton of stuff to make stuff like delicious. The ribs smell so good because I'm cooking it indirectly on a barbecue, and then I'm also using some maple wood chips on there, so you get a little bit of the smoky flavor and slow cooking it as well, right? I have a Mr. Bannock spice that I use on all of my meats that we smoke and grill and all that. And there's like brown sugar, coarse salt, dried rosemary, chili flakes, chili powder, salt and pepper in there. It's very good.
The dedication the troll puts into his dishes pays off. Within 2 years of time, the growth in sales has tripled. Foreseeing the bright future of his food truck, the troll wishes that one day he can share his passion for indigenous cuisine in his own restaurant.
If I had a restaurant, like, I would bring in specialty steaks and like different kinds of crab and different kinds of salmon and all that kind of stuff, and be pretty creative. Like, the goal would be to have a restaurant where I had like my own garden, like a restaurant garden, right? And like grow stuff that I want and will use on the menu. And like literally like from here to there, like within like 30 feet or something, right? But just do it in stages, right? That's a long-term goal, and I'll be 37 this year, so I think I got some time.
Teresa Contoy grew up in a family of 20. Since she was tall enough to reach the ingredients, she started to cook for her siblings. But it wasn't until 2008 when she decided to start her culinary career. At that time, her mother recovered from brain surgeries under her care and support by using food as medicine. She realized that it was the time for her to develop culinary skills.
So I started searching different places to go, and I ended up going to the Vancouver Community College, where that particular year I took every scholarship, every award. I was put into competition. I took first place. I was surprised. Took first place, and then I was asked to become an instructor there.
In 2011, she established Cedar Feast House for people who needed a second chance.
Well, to be honest, like, I mean, I needed a second chance. So I made my own second chance. I recovered from my addiction by helping with my mother. From there, I decided when I went to culinary arts, I thought, there's nowhere for me to go. I don't know. I don't want to work in the kitchen for somebody, you know, and then I'm better off to start my own company. So I decided to start my own company. I made it happen for myself, and now I'm making it happen for the other people. So I've hired a lot of people who have either come from drug recovery or need a second chance and just gotten out of jail, and you know they want to straighten up their lives. So I've given a lot of single mothers, you know, jobs, stuff like that. I mean, we've had situations where we've had the babies in the kitchen and somebody looking after the babies while the catering is running. I'm grateful now because I finally do have a. And it becomes like a family, you know. My assistant, she does everything. She's my right arm, and she's a hard worker. I've got other people that work for the company. You know, she needed a second chance. I gave her the second chance. You know, she had just got out of jail. She needed some help. I've helped her, and she's done nothing but blossom. You know, her husband has come out of jail, and same, same thing. Now his children, their children work for me, you know, and it just keeps expanding. So it becomes a big family situation for us.
So at that time, why did you decide to start a catering business rather than, say, a restaurant?
In a school, the Native Ed College, I started a little cafeteria, so we started giving them. So then we started doing caterings, and then we had to, our contract had ended there, so I thought, okay, I don't want to lose my staff, so I rented a restaurant, and I learned very quickly, there's a lot of work in the restaurant, and what if you don't get customers, you know, or what if your customers are not happy? So it became very trying. I ended up learning that catering is the best place to go because there's low overhead, you have confirmed contracts, you know, it's easy enough to do, to deliver all this food, and people are, you know, the checks keep coming in. So to me, I always tell my students, if you guys want to look at doing that, restaurants great and everything else, but start with catering first.
So do you think there have been fewer economic hardships after you started to only focus on catering?
Well, like it's like I said, you learn. The first few years, I was at a deficit. You know, I wasn't making any money, but I just kept pouring the money back into the company. Anything needed was what poured back into. And the last 3 years, I'm finally coming out with a profit, which I'm still pouring back into the company. I haven't taken a paycheck in all these years that I've had, but that just shows you how much catering and food is my passion. My teaching job is my bread and butter, so that keeps me afloat. But I never touched my teaching money put into the company. In the last 3 years, it's just been able to just pour it back in, and it's been able to establish. And like I say, it's word of mouth. People see my food. You know, the city of Vancouver hires me now, you know, as one of their contact clients for the contract. You know, we're feeding, like I said, 1,200 people a week because of the city of Vancouver. And then there's another one, the Aboriginal Front Door. They're helping us too because they want us to go in business with them to help them. So it's trading off with each other and helping each other as a community. And that's what I always believe. It takes a community. They say it takes a community to raise a child. Well, it takes a community to help other people.
Yes, giving back to the community. That's the meaning behind the food Cedar Feast House serves. Since the start of the pandemic, Contour has been collecting food to support homeless people in the downtown Eastside community.
They've come to me, so they will be dropping off some donations, but there are things like sandwiches that have to be eaten now. So I will go this morning, I will go down to the catering and receive those donations and see what I can use. If there's eggs, I'll use them, that sort of stuff. But if there's things that are already made, I go out to the community and we'll hand it out. So I have like a few volunteers coming in, and those volunteers are families that are struggling too. So I give them food as well. So it's a win-win situation. So I get free labor, but they get food, you know, and then we get to feed the community. You know, we have homeless people coming to my place now going, is food here yet? Is food here yet? You know, and they wait.
As Contour gives back to the community, Cedar Feast House receives support from the community in return. Even during the pandemic, the business has been thriving and is looking to make $250,000 this year. And now, Contour is making plans to further support the community when the pandemic passes.
We're talking right now about joining with the non-charity, and they want to open up a kitchen, but they want me to do the teaching. Because I have my Red Seal certification, they want me to teach these people who need second chances to give them a skill so they can run this cafe that they want to be opening. So this is something we want to do in the future. Other things I want to do in the future, before COVID, I was wanting to do a food truck, but then COVID hit, and I thought, okay, that's my sign, that, you know, focus on what I'm doing. And so I'm hoping, and then by next year, when everything passes, that I'm able to go and open up an indigenous food truck that's diabetic-oriented. There are no diabetic-oriented food trucks, and a lot of indigenous people are diabetic.
Thank you for listening to this episode. This episode is produced by Nancy, and I would like to thank Paul Natural and Teresa Contour for their support.